So, for those who doesn't know, Slade is pretty much like a top school for art. And then you enter your academy, which is basically like like the most top one as well.
Woman, like, siapa namanya? Kalau di bahasa Indonesia itu gak main-main sekolahnya. It's like, these are like top schools in the UK. Like, so what was, like, I understand Slade, but what was the story going to Royal Academy? Wasn't it like, if you go to your academy, it's like by scholarship or something? Or was I wrong?
Well, it's all scholarship. The Royal Academy isn't affiliated with a university, which means that it could run independently in terms of however they want to. They get their money from patrons and sponsors.
Yeah.
So they decide what they want to do with the money. So with most universities, that money often goes to, or a large part of it goes to admin, either computer facilities, library, like all the things that, you know, you often expect to come with a university. So on some levels, it didn't have all the, facilities as a big university, but you had lots and lots and lots of one-to-one tuition. I mean, we'd have like the best artists coming. You know, they had a show in town, they'd come in and give a talk or give some teaching. We were underneath, the studios were in Piccadilly, which was most amazing.
I'm so jealous.
It was tough as well, though. Like, I do remember going to these crits and people, I mean, some people wouldn't come in, like, if they had a bad crit, they just wouldn't come in for a week.
I'm sure.
I mean, I really hope things have changed. To be honest, I don't know if that's the best way of, you know, sort of teaching.
Yeah.
Because it was really quite aggressive. I felt it kind of developed cliques within the year group. I definitely kind of enjoyed my time at the Slade more. It could be because I was younger. It could be because it's sort of a bit more bohemian than it's kind of teaching. I think somewhere like the Royal Academy, you were kind of expected to be a professional artist once so there's like an immense pressure, a lot more so than the Slade. I'd say like most of my friends at the Slade are still in art. And I'm not 100% sure, like, I think a lot of people from the RA, I think a lot of them are artists, but I think a lot of them gave up as well. Whereas I think in the Slade, more of my friends became kind of teachers, and I don't know, I think it was, I mean, obviously it depends year by year, but I felt, in terms of the student, I was perhaps less depressed. But yeah, there were difficult places to get in, there were difficult places to survive, there were, you had, yeah, so every student was had full scholarship for kind of like living allowance money to live off. I think it taught me, I think one thing that it really did teach me is this kind of criticality, which was kind of really embedded, like, yeah, I think after 3 years. I think at the Slade, we were, if we wanted to go to crits, we could, but if we didn't want to, it's fine as well. And they really disrupt your kind of flow, I think, if you have to do these things every week. So I think those, you know, I think that's kind of very, I don't think you learn that just through kind of, you sort of have to be trained to be able to do that, trained to like heighten your criticality. Like any, like, you know, like if you went to Oxford or Cambridge or whatever, you'd have to be quite, you'd have to know your arguments and you'd have to be able to cite it and case it. So it was good for that. But I think kind of somewhere at the Royal Academy, I think I still was that slightly annoying girl that kind of organised stuff. Why was I annoying? I think, like, I don't know, I think because organising stuff came so naturally for me, I think it was always like, oh yeah, I can still do that, you know, get you know, I was always quite eager. That's why I always thought I was going to go more kind of behind the scenes, even at the Royal Academy. So, I don't know, I think I had this thing where I guess when I get pushed into it by my teachers who have been supportive, I was able to do these like big things, like big, like kind of crazy, well, big paintings or big installations or kind of in your face and always pushing kind of people. But the other side of it was I guess kind of the voice in my head from, I guess, our upbringing, which was like, well, obviously you're never going to be an artist because you are a brown girl. Like, have you seen other brown girls? So what I said, and it was like, no, I don't know. I think I didn't even say I still have those kind of voices in my head. Like, most artists and most creative people do. I think they have the good angel and the bad angel. They almost need to kind of coexist in order to make you work and pick yourself up. And I mean, like, progressing from that, even the art world is quite tough. Working with galleries, you know, I think quite often you think, oh, once you have a gallery, that's it. It's like, it's a bit like having a job for life or something, but it isn't. It's a bit like a marriage where you have to make things work on both sides. Because the reality is that there's a commercial incentive as to why they're working with you, and from our perspective, you know, that commercial incentive exists, but we also, as artists, need to have a kind of creative openness to have space to keep on going. But, you know, I think you make a choice in life whether, you know, how you want to make your art, how you want to fund your art, how you want to live. I think I was quite happy for a while doing kind of part-time jobs and part-time art, but I don't know, I felt like I couldn't really get in depth with what I wanted, and then like I'd kind of get into something creatively and then have to go to work, kind of like saying, taking in tickets at the really, you know, taking in tickets at an art museum, or, you know, looking after children, or teaching or something, whatever my part-time jobs were at the time. So I think the kind of made a conscious decision to make art more full-time for me, because then I was able to not be disruptive, but also it's almost like the work kind of demands it. And quite often, it's not, I would say it's an alter ego, but I often think of work quite separately from me as center. In Henley or Simpson, my parents, you know, they doesn't really, I see them both, I can separate the two quite easily in my head, and live quite separately between the two.
With the experience of having that, I don't know if it's just British education, but it seems like the art studies, the one that I know and the one that I heard from you just now, is that the crits are like, crits is when you finish one work and then we show it together, and then like, and people start commenting or giving feedbacks or giving things like that, and it does build the, well, it's, the name is crits, so it's basically about being critical, and that therefore builds your sort of your like criticality. But do you think that, I mean, there's always arguments like, is it necessary to do such thing during school? Is it going to be applied when you work? What do you think?
I mean, I think it's necessary. I think, I don't know, for a while when I started teaching, I preferred calling them like tutorial. Crits or group, you know, or like, I don't know, this idea. I think it's how the sort of create the learning effectively, sort of quite destructive, where you tear somebody apart and then build them up. I think some people can cope with it and some people can't.
Yeah.
And there's another part of teaching where you build and build, and what you do, you kind of build a scaffold around the students. So like, even if they do unravel or take apart some of the things that they're thinking, able to rebuild them again in a kind of safer environment because you have a scaffold structure behind them. So really, this idea of like, you know, whether the students themselves feel quite supportive in learning and relearning. And then there's the skills, but you also have to teach them certain skills that will big screen to the outside world. Like, in some ways, doing a crypt, unless you build those individual skills to do that yourself, I'm not going to be in a sort of artificial environment where you have 20 people come to your studio every week to talk about your work. That's not going to happen that regularly. It's going to be, you have to develop your own ways how you want to kind of learn in the outside world. I think though at the same time that it's important that students feel safe and they don't get depressed for a week. Because you almost don't want to be in this cycle where you almost have, I had students that had to be like bipolar to do art, high or exactly low, and then it becomes I guess we know more about mental health and how to kind of figure out how to balance our lives better. I would hate it if this kind of very harsh critical system forms this sort of behavior where you have to be so sad and depressed or unable to kind of face this but I don't know, there's people that also think that I don't know. I guess I also have feelings in my kind of head, and it's a way of balancing out. But I think that's also the very bad news side of me. my parents don't worry, you'll be fine. I think it's this idea of balancing our lives, and it's good to work hard, but it's also good to relax. But it's good, my father always said, always, I think two things is always have fun. With your work, and then always make your boss happy. I don't have a boss as such, but I always try to make everyone that I work with happy in the little way that I can. And I think hard work pays off, but I think this idea of balance and feeding and kind of good well-being. And I think it's sort of interesting because now we know more about mental health, and it's very important to take a break or just to sort of be a bit more, it's not just working hard in the studio, but it's also learning how to relax and switching your mind off sometimes and knowing how to, speak to friends and loved ones and how to others, that support network around you.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of how coronavirus, one of the benefits is that I think we have become more reflective in terms of where we are as individuals with the world and what's really important to us.
It's true. It is a lot of reflections the past 6 months at least.
Maybe too much reflection.
So you've been active also, you said that you were, was more into public art, which is pretty much you can find anywhere now. I think you can find it in, obviously in the UK, and then is there any in Bali? No, there's none in Bali yet, but I know there's in South Korea, and then recently in, is it Pakistan?
I was in
Dubai,
Sharjah, in the Middle East, near Dubai, recently. And I think that's why the work can travel, because it is abstract. And it is that a lot of it, it works well, for example, in Islamic countries where, you can't represent the figure. So there's something more kind of universal in some ways for doing abstract work, because it can speak to different cultures and different environments.
But you also do exhibitions in galleries, and you did have a recent exhibition that got closed because of a lockdown.
It opened and closed all through lockdown, which is really strange. Now I guess it is sort of a history for that, because it never really opened to the public. I only lives online. Whereas I think most other exhibitions either extended or they waited, or they sort of reached their kind of exhibition schedule. But I think because gallery has a very rolling kind of quick pro- underground, it was quite important for the world to change, I guess. So lockdown was lifted a bit for the next show that was after mine. But yeah, that was a kind of surreal experience, having to like put the show up and then straight away, okay, think about how is this going to exist online. You know, what am I going to, like, how am I going to do it? Just the kind of practicalities of it. So we filmed it on an iPad, I sort of semi-scripted what I was going to say, but I'm not a presenter, so it was like a lot of hard work for me to kind of figure out what to say to camera. Because, it doesn't come, I feel much more comfortable when I don't have to see my face. And even like now, it's like, in this sort of corona age where we're doing a lot of Zoom calls, I'd much rather do a WhatsApp phone call. It's a lot more relaxed, a lot more like, I don't have to see myself.
Yeah.
It's just a bit weird. Like, it just feels more normal. And I think the speed of it is a bit quicker, so it feels like you're having a normal conversation rather than staring at a screen
with
a few seconds delayed. And so there's a kind of disconnect with my mind and visually what's happening with the voice. Yeah, that's my comment.
Yeah, it's interesting.